Regional Program Specialist with INSOURCE, Indiana's Resource Center for Families with Special Needs. We have a special guest speaker this morning, Dr. Tara Reinhart, and I'll introduce her in just a moment, but we've got a really, really important topic, raising expectations, detouring the school to prison pipeline. But before we get into the introduction and into the session itself, I'd like to do a few housekeeping issues. We're using the question and answer box, so please post your questions there. Dr. Reinhart and Jill and I can follow along and make sure that those questions are addressed. You can post anonymously if you choose. An evaluation is going to be provided to you at the end of the webinar, and we would appreciate it if you would take a couple minutes to answer the very, very brief survey. And question 6 on the survey provides a link to download your certificate of attendance. So another reason to do the survey. If you are listening only by telephone, some folks didn't join via computer. If you're listening only by phone, we have no way of knowing who you are. And if you would like to get credit for having attended, you're going to need to contact INSOURCE at insource.org or call the toll-free number 800-332-4433 to identify yourself by the end of business day today to let staff there know that you did in fact attend the webinar by phone and that you would like to get that certificate. We do have archived webinars on our website. This one will be recorded. I can't tell you exactly when it will show up in our archived webinars, but it will be there at some point. So you can go back and review it again or share it with others as needed. And if you have any questions, you can always contact INSOURCE at insource.org. Okay, so Tara, if you want to go ahead and share your PowerPoint, I will go ahead and start the introduction here. Find your share box, click on it, and open your PowerPoint presentation. Dr. Tara Reinhart is the current Director of Special Services in MSD of Wayne Township since 2011. She has quite a resume of experience. Jill and I got to know her first back when she worked for the Indiana Department of Education as the State Response to Intervention Specialist. But she was also an exceptional learner specialist with special education complaints, disproportionality, and parent involvement. So she's got a lot of experience in the special education background, or has that background. So Tara, are you able to share your screen?
It is not allowing me to.
Okay.
It says I cannot share screen while the other participant is sharing.
Oh, okay. Usually we just steal it from one another.
Oh, got it. Okay, let's try this.
Here we go. Yeah.
Can you see that?
Yes.
Wonderful.
Okay. All right. Very good. And you can go ahead and take over when you're ready.
Okay. Well, welcome. I appreciate this opportunity. It has been my pleasure working alongside INSOURCE as we're advocating for students and families with disabilities. And in my role as Director of Special Services, that is always my position and my passion. So when they asked me to speak about detouring the school to prison pipeline, that is something I'm extremely passionate about and feel that I've done that ever since I began as a special educator. Been in education now over 20 years, which is a little surprising to me that it's been that long because it seems like just yesterday. But constantly learning, constantly growing, and just really appreciate this opportunity to kind of share my thoughts. Again, they're my thoughts, and hopefully open it up to other thought partners around the state to push me to grow in this conversation as well. So we'll start. We have this YouTube video, so I've not done a video on a webinar, but I think it's a really important video for us to watch, so we're going to try it. Hopefully you'll be able to see it the way I see it. And first we got to have some advertisements.
When a kid gets in trouble at school, we used to send them to the principal's office. Now we're suspending, expelling, or even arresting kids for the smallest misbehaviors. This trend is called the school-to-prison pipeline. There are pipelines all across the country. Nationwide, as many as 95% of out-of-school suspensions are for nonviolent misbehaviors like these. In one town, the cops were called to break up a fight, a water balloon fight. When you crack down harshly on kids for minor infractions, you're telling them one thing: you are a problem. Suspending or expelling a kid increases his or her chance to drop out of high school. And we know high school dropouts are 3.5 times more likely than high school graduates to be arrested in their lifetime. Sending a kid to juvenile detention center also makes crime more likely in their future. Kids who are incarcerated are 67% more likely to be back in jail by the age of 25 than similar kids who didn't go to prison. And this zero tolerance policy doesn't apply to everyone equally. In Wake County, North Carolina, which has one of the largest school-to-prison pipelines, 40% of black kids caught with cell phones were suspended, while only 17% of white kids were suspended for the same thing. Though blacks and Latinos make up only 29% of public school students, they make up 70% of students involved in in-school arrests or who are referred to law enforcement. Schools even crack down on special needs students, arresting them for the very behaviors that stem from their special needs. 32% of youth in juvenile detention are special needs students. That's the school-to-prison pipeline, another way that the United States incarcerates more people than any other country on earth.
So, thinking about that video and just kind of how it resonates with our work in special education, we know that a lot of our students are communicating needs through behaviors. And if we don't have the correct lens and the perception of those behaviors, we may try to punish the behaviors versus actually problem solving them and teaching lagging skills around them. So again, the school to prison pipeline. So this data just presents who's in the pipeline. As we said, we have 6.4 million students in the US who are classified as needing special education. And they make up about 13% of the nation's K through 12 enrollment. Specifically for my district, I serve 2,500 students with disabilities, so it is about 13% as well of our district population. For children with disabilities, though, 85% of the folks incarcerated have learning or emotional disabilities. Unfortunately, only 37% of these youth receive special education while in school. Most students with disabilities were either undiagnosed or not properly served in school. So we have a policy that when a student is starting to show some challenging behaviors, that we are taking a look at upstream behaviors. So we study Dr. Ross Green's work. And so looking at the lagging skills, understanding, trying to be curious about why a behavior is occurring, and then teaching those lagging skills versus just trying to do replacement behaviors or some kind of punishment. Many students have invisible disabilities, we know that. Many of our adults are dealing with things that we can't see. And so sometimes we do get the clash of the forces between the adults and the scholars that we're serving. And so we have to make sure that, again, we're staying curious about it. We're not getting frustrated and overwhelmed by that behavior. Some more data, 2009-2010 survey of 72,000 schools, so that was K through 12, shows that while black students made up only 18% of those enrolled in school sampled, they accounted for 35% of those suspended once, 46% of those suspended more than once, and 39% of all expulsions. So one of the statistics here from the U.S. Department of Civil Rights, or Education Office of Civil Rights, was that 3.5 times more are African-American students than white students suspended or expelled. The interesting piece, when I was at the Department of Education, John Hill and I were the ones who worked on significant disproportionality in our federal indicator. When I came to Wayne Township, when I was first assistant director and then director, we actually had significant disproportionality here. And we were suspending our students with IEPs who were African-American four times more than their white classmates. And so we've done a tremendous amount of work as an entire district looking at why that might be the case and actually finding that it was a much broader case than just in the world of special education, as I'm sure most people who've done this work find. So zero tolerance. When we think about zero tolerance, here what we're thinking about is, I would say, our traditional disciplinary approach really came out of Columbine and some of the other mass school tragedies, but really thinking about disciplinary policies used in schools that punish selected offenses severely, no matter what the circumstances are. As an elementary principal, there were never two cases the same. The circumstances weren't the same. Sometimes, unfortunately, the public would prefer that if this, then that kind of was taken, but that was not, I did not run a zero tolerance school. Every case was different and it all depended on the previous incidents, the student, all of that. So I think that's something that we need to really think through as we move into more school tragedies. The number one hope is that our schools are safe. And so when we think about challenging behaviors and we think about people being afraid, sometimes that we use zero tolerance in order to deal with that versus being able to stay thoughtful and think through all of the circumstances around the situation. Okay, so a few other examples here. You Google zero tolerance policies and you'll see all kinds of stories. You turn on the news, you might see them. But a few ones that jumped out at me, a five-year-old boy in Pennsylvania was suspended for bringing a five-inch toy axe to school as part of his firefighter's Halloween costume. And so, you know, I can sit back and say, wow, as a principal, I can't even imagine doing that. But for some reason, that occurred. They decided to then apologize because the firemen weren't happy about that. And so got some more press on that and kind of helped people rethink that zero tolerance policy. Another example, a sophomore who brought nail clippers with an attached nail file to school was given a 10-day suspension and threatened with expulsion. So zero tolerance for zero tolerance is what that one was called. And really that's what it was about. So we now have to think even going to the airport. You know, what's in my bag? What, you know, nothing that you would use as a weapon, but could be seen as a weapon. We're now experiencing that in our schools. And again, due to kind of the mass shootings, mass, 9/11, just a lot of folks that are afraid of what might happen. All right, so here is another one. This video, it resonated with me again, so I wanted to share it with you all. So we'll take a peek at this one.
Okay. My name is Kyle Thompson. I like playing football, playing video games, hanging out with my friends. The vice principal said if I had a school full of kids like yours, I'd be the happiest man in the district.
Kyle's a very sensitive kid. I mean, he's fun, coach, it's fun to be around.
For somebody with his personality to get in this kind of trouble is so shocking to me. I didn't see it coming. I could never have imagined this.
Just don't face value. I find it hard to believe.
I had a list in my bag of, it was titled Hit List, but it wasn't really to hurt anybody. And my friend took it out of my notebook. I saw him take it out, so I took it back from him. And my teacher came over. She took it from me. And I got up and I grabbed the paper and we were pulling it back and forth.
all the witness statements said the teacher was laughing, the teacher was playing, we were all laughing, we were all playing.
When we were pulling back and forth, she was laughing at first, so I thought it was just as a joke. She got serious, and I let go. She left the class, and then the hall monitor came, and they escorted me to the office. The principal told the police officer to take me to the police station. And the scariest part was probably being handcuffed inside of there. I felt that I deserved maybe a couple days of suspension at most, but I didn't think it was really 180 days worth of consequence.
When there's activities up at the school, he can't attend. He can't go watch his sister. He can't watch his, you know, former teammates play.
I can't play football. So really, I just throw football around with my friends, play video games, watch TV, but I don't really see my friends as much.
Here I am now, thousands of dollars later, 6-7 months down the road, and all day long when I'm gone, I worry about Kyle. My son has gotten progressively depressed. I still see remnants of, like, the old Kyle. But there's a sadness there, and that kills me. I want him to be back in school. I need him to be in a school building around other children.
It seems like it'll be pretty hard going back after being out of school for a long time. But it's something I would like to do.
So, as we watch that video, you know, kids are kids. They don't have fully developed brains until, I think the research says, 27 at this point. And so they are going to make mistakes. They are going to do things as jokes. But at this point, it puts everyone between a rock and a hard place as to, you know, of course, he had the hit list. He said it was a joke, but what if it was real? Who's to determine if it was real or not? What, you know, there's just so many things to think through. And so, again, that zero tolerance approach is, you know, he's going to be out no matter what. And so I think all of those statements from the classmates, everything that was going on, you know, we want to make sure we're fully vetting it, but we don't want to just use that zero tolerance policy. So thinking about everyone in the classroom has a story that leads to misbehavior or defiance. 9 times out of 10, the story behind the misbehavior won't make you angry, it will break your heart. And so as we've been doing work in our district and really all across the nation about our students that are dealing with so many traumatic experiences, with so much stress from society and social media, and the models that we see on the news of problem solving, the fear that some of our kids are faced with every single day are the things that they're communicating to us through their behavior that they have a need, and we need to help them meet that need in a positive way. And for some of our kiddos, they just don't have the words to be able to tell us what they're afraid of or what's hurting. Instead, they use sometimes angry behavior to show us that, to be seen and heard. And so that's really kind of our goal, is to make sure that we're being curious about that behavior. We're not thinking of it as misbehavior or defiance. That behavior is communication. And we need to listen and we need to respond. So our youngest, we have a preschool here in Wayne Township that serves many students. We have about 300 students that we serve. Many students have an identified disability, and so they have an IEP. Interesting, this Yale study found that preschool teachers disproportionately watch Black boys for potential misbehavior. And so as you look at this, 2016, it's not really that old as we think about research, but the other significant result of this data is that boys are looked at for and watched for potential misbehavior. There's a video we use about you find what you watch for. It's a video called, I think it's called Monkey Business. And there are people passing a ball and they're in different colored shirts and you're trying to count how many times they pass the ball. That's your goal. That's what you're asked to do. And in the middle of all of it, a person dressed in a gorilla costume walks through. The curtain in the background changes. Some people never ever see the gorilla and never ever see the curtain change because they're looking for the basketball passes. And so they miss opportunities of success. They miss when people were doing it right versus wrong. So again, we're going to find what we're looking for. And if that's what we're expected to count, then again, we're going to find that. So the implicit bias was present in both Black and white preschool teachers. Some folks had asked the question, well, was that just the white preschool teachers? No, actually, it was both Black and white preschool teachers. Excuse me. So incarceration increases. Some more data about a rise in incarceration rates. So we know that our Black prisoners, our Hispanic prisoners have increased. When we look at from just a short span, not even 10 years, from 1988 to 1994, our number of young Black prisoners increased by 355%. So sorry. The number of young Hispanics increased by 82%, and the number of young whites increased by 67%. Over 90% of our prison population is men, which is very interesting. And when we look at our students with disabilities, we have a much higher population of boys than we do girls. Sorry, having a little cough attack. All right. One more video to show you.
This is my 25th year being on the department, and this is the first time I have ever experienced anything like this. It is heartbreaking to see our young people have to deal with violence the way they do.
Officer Cockrell and I grew up in this community when we worked with the kids in the community. We can connect with them on that level.
We're coming up on the memorial for Mike Brown. Everything took place right here.
This is actually one of our bus stops. Our buses had to travel through all of the unrest. We're really concerned for how can we get our students on the buses safely? Can we get them on the buses safely with all the police activity that's going on in the community? We spent a lot of time to make sure it was safe for the students to return to school. Morning. Saturday morning, Michael Brown was killed right in our community. We were to start school on that Monday. Our main goal is to establish a very positive relationship with the students and the children who are in our school district. And so that's the focus of the school resource officers who support Riverview.
To be the school resource officer, you have to have a passion for children. It's got to be inside your heart that you make a difference in your community.
Good morning, Today is Wednesday, January 21st, 2015. Have you been bullied, or do you know someone being bullied? Please report it by dropping a note in the bully box that is located in the Student Services Center. Central Middle, let's make it a great day or not. The choice is yours. And remember, it's always a great day to be a Ram.
Officer Ronnie Cochran with St. Louis County Police Department. Right now, school resource officer for Central Middle School. I grew up in the neighborhood.
Where you going?
I understand some of their struggles. I went through that too. So I reach out to them and let them understand that just because I wear this badge, I'm still compassionate about them. What's up, fella? When I first arrived, everybody just moved to the side and the conversation stopped. And all I can hear was, why is the police here? For about 2 weeks, I was just making small conversation with everyone. The students became relaxed. I got relaxed with them. And that's when the relationship started developing.
I just want to see by show of hands, how many of you have had some encounters with the police that have been not so great? All right, so thank you for your hands, okay? So, I want to take this opportunity real quick because we've been through a lot in our community. So what changes would we like to see take place with our law enforcement so that we can all work together? And that we can feel appreciated and respected.
I was over at Dillwood, and me and my friends were walking down the street, and it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And basically, the police had caught us walking. We was questioning and stuff, and he took a very long time to let us go. So we were scared, so we ran home and stuff. And I had nobody to give us advice, like Officer Cop.
Before you or act or react on the situation, make sure you know, like, everything that's going on so, like, you don't hurt an innocent person.
Okay. I just want to let them know that all young black men is not a threat or not a threat. So you ain't got no reason to be scared of us.
Was the conversation easy for us? No, it was very, very difficult. Me being married to a police officer and my feelings may have been one way. And you have students here who may have known Mike Brown or may have been family members. And we knew that we couldn't come to it in any type of biased way. We wanted to hear everyone's voice and we wanted everybody to be comfortable.
All this violence in the world for no reason. I just kept my head in the books and stayed determined. We have a police officer school to help take us. I feel protected, safe, and that I have someone there.
I'm really proud of the way you all have handled yourself this year. It says a lot about you all. And that what has been in our community, you all are not letting it spill over into your school, into your education.
After Michael Brown was shot, I was having a really hard time. Officer Cockle was coming down the hallway, and he asked me, he was like, you know, what's wrong? Because normally when he sees me, I'm smiling and I'm happy because that's what I try to present. And he was like, oh, well. You know, tell me what's wrong. I'll see if I can help you. And if you don't feel like talking about it, just know that I'm always going to be here for you. There's always people in this building that will be here for you. And that, his words, you know, it helped me out a lot.
What's wrong? Is he okay?
Although he is.
Okay, we're going to stop it there. Because the important piece here is that we believe that we can be detours to the pipeline. when we create safe and quality schools. And in Wayne Township, but I would say many places in Indiana, we listen to and collaborate with students and parents. We have Dr. Ross Green's research-based approach, and I know many districts were able to see him actually when we hosted him a few years back and got really great positive feedback on his work and how it really changed the perspective and the lens of challenging behaviors. We foster meaningful relationships between students and adults in schools. We know the research around trauma says one caring adult, one trusted caring adult, can put 20 years back on a student's life. And so that's really important to us. We have many different kinds of ways that we do that, not only through restorative practices, but our different groups, student groups that we use. Collecting and analyzing and monitoring our data is so important. We typically did not drill our data down for discipline, and so it's important that we do that. Also, our climate data, understanding the temperature of the building, kind of where are we as a building? Do we have a lot of unrest? Do we feel like staff and students are on the same page? And are we really working as in our vision of where we want to be? And then explicitly addressing racial and other disparities in discipline. So one of the really tough parts of doing this work with significant disproportionality was actually pulling up students and addressing administrators and teachers and other folks that had a part in it and trying to figure out where might we have gone wrong and how do we do better. So we know once we know better, we do better. And then providing training. So we have training for teachers, not only on positive behavior intervention supports, challenging behaviors, our implicit bias. We do undoing racism training. We have cultural competence training. And we also have switched our assaultive behavior, anti-restraint training to PROACT. And that really aligns with our vision of how we see behaviors as a need and how we can be responsive as the adult and stay professional and stay at our baseline. And it really has made quite a difference, not only in our staff and student injuries, but also a huge reduction in restraint and seclusion and just how we treat each other with dignity. We also support and fund alternatives. So we say in Wayne that everyone has a path, and for some, it's just their own path. If we know that something's not working, we're going to find a different way. we have a great opportunity to really help students find their purpose and find their way and then help get them on that track successfully. We funded some school-based mental health professionals and counselors and SROs. So that has really made a difference that our student resource officers are here to be mentors. And again, as I think it was Omar Jr. said in the video, I feel safe when he's here. And so we want that sense of security, not only for staff, students, and families, community members that are visiting our buildings. We adopt a common sense discipline. We're not looking at the zero tolerance. We're looking at what makes sense. And then how do we go about making that district-wide? We have created agreements with our IMPD, our police department, and court systems so that we're not arresting. Luckily, we have in Marion County, we've limited those arrests, especially of students with disabilities, as well as our use of restraints. We also use our community outreach officers to talk about student rights. We've done a lot of work around becoming trauma-informed. We have 4 schools that have done that work very intentionally. And so we're seeing benefits definitely from that work. And then we have, we just received a couple years ago a grant for social, emotional, and behavioral wellness. So we've been working alongside with the Indiana Department of Education to have SEL coaches and behavioral coaches in our district to really do the good work, the tier one, tier two work. Because as we know, the most restrictive is jail And so we want to make sure that we're putting those interventions in place that are positive and they're proactive. All right, so we know that we make a difference. Our families, our staff, our community members, our politicians, we all are able to make a difference. And so this one is Unique is her name. And she talks about her situation, how an SRO impacted her, how feeling safe impacted her, and really the difference we can make in really making a better humankind.
Oh, it's tough. Nobody's safe here. Cops don't even like to come here. It's not a nice place.
Is there a lot of fighting?
Yes, daily. Could be somebody, you know, they want your lunch. They think you're weak. They're trying to show dominance. You know, teachers are scared to death.
Do you remember one of the students named Unique?
Yeah, shy kid, very withdrawn. I think everything she witnessed here at the school broke her spirit. It's tough. It's tough. I mean, you try to save them, but what do you do? You know, they do so much.
In middle school, you shouldn't have to go through that. Especially as a kid. Fights going on. People bringing knives. One of my friends got stabbed. I was just scared. I just felt like I'm invisible. Maybe I should just give up. I just seen too much. I couldn't take it anymore. As a kid, you're going to snap, and that's what happened. I snapped. I went to the restroom, and I saw like a nasty message, and it was like, to me, I was on the verge of like literally losing it. I was screaming, I was kicking, I was just punching the walls. I kicked the door and I just ran out and I saw Officer Al. At that moment, he saw me. He definitely comforted me. He was listening to the frustration and the anger and the sadness that I had, tears in his eyes. I felt that I was seen. I wasn't invisible anymore. I was supposed to be here.
What about standards?
It's hard to talk about Miss Daniels without getting choked up. She saved my life.
You can only do so much. You can only do so much. And sometimes I literally feel defeated. Fortunately, I have some students who I know I'm getting. Sorry. Just to see progress lets me know that I'm moving on the right path. Because I know that if I've touched just, not just as a drama teacher, but as a teacher in general, if you can get to that pain, because a lot of these children, my goodness, they just have something to say. They're not being listened to. They're crying out. They're acting out as their way of saying, I am in the room. I am here. And so I don't just arm them with the script. I arm them with paper and a pen. You tell your own story. Unique had all the makings of a warrior, a leader,
as we collaborated, she grew more confident. She got her voice back, and she was just fearless. She's one of the students who taught me how deep I could love.
You know where she's at now?
I don't know where she is, but I would love to see her.
It's been so long. It's been at least 10 years. So,
you believe it?
I believe that it truthfully.
What's your name?
Mercy.
What's your name? I'm talking to you. Who are you? I can't hear you. Who are you?
Miss Daniels?
Who are you? I'm unique.
Oh, no.
To the back of that wall. I'm unique.
Why are you here, unique?
Because I broke barriers.
You did what?
I broke barriers.
There's someone in the back of that room not paying any attention to you. Make them hear you.
I broke barriers.
Tell them, who are you?
I am unique.
Why are you here?
Because I am unique and I belong here.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I knew you could do it.
So that video for our district definitely has helped us think about things in many different things in many different ways. So thinking about I am unique, I belong here, our students with disabilities, is that's the message as well, is that you are unique and you belong here. And how we serve you is specific to you. So again, everybody matters, and one of the things that I'm not sure we can do a whole lot of discussion, but how have you armed a scholar? So again, it could be around this topic of the school-to-prison pipeline and detouring that. Think about how maybe you have armed a scholar in that regard, or maybe it's a scholar with a disability that you've armed in order to belong in a place, in a space. To really change the way, similar to the teacher did with Unique. There were things that she was using in her adulthood that that teacher taught her. And so what are things that you think of? I think we can maybe use the Q&A box if you want to put a thought down. I would love for you to respond. Maybe as you're doing that, I'll keep moving forward, and then we'll stop when we see some of those questions coming in, if that sounds good.
Tara, I just would like to remind everybody, if they're looking for their question and answer box, if you bring your cursor down to the bottom part of your screen, you'll see where there is some icons that do pop up for you that you can see where the Q&A box is. Please post your questions in there. This is a great time. This is a very timely subject that Tara has brought to us. So please feel free to post any of those questions in that box.
Thank you, Jill.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, I'll keep going. And then Jill, if you can kind of watch that, we'll respond to those. So another great resource that we use in our district is really thinking through kind of that punitive teacher approach to the responsive teacher approach. We've done a lot of work with Peace Learning Center, which is actually right out of Indianapolis, an amazing resource around restorative practices. And so really starting to shift our scholars' mindset and our adult mindsets around when something happens, kind of the clash of the forces. We have, you know, as Dr. Green says, it takes two to tango. But if one, at least one person, is utilizing a responsive approach, the other is more more aware of that and hopefully more apt to use the responsive approach back. And so a very common, maybe common kind of thing is a student shouldered his teacher out of the way when she blocked the classroom door as he tried to leave. So the punitive teacher would argue, call the school resource officer, bar him from class, or press assault charges. A responsive teacher, though, would be very reflective. And one of the things in PROACT is we train, do not try to block a door because you will get shouldered, right? That's just like if they're in fight, flight, or freeze, you've now become the bear in the woods. And so they're going to do whatever it takes to get through you because of fear or safety or whatever's going on, that basic need that they need met. But a responsive teacher reflects, what clues did I miss that Michael was upset before he tried to walk out? So being very observational about what about this student makes me think maybe he's away from his baseline. Something's changed in him. What social and cultural capital did Michael risk if he had backed down from me in front of his peers? Wow, that's a big one. We know that there is not an adult that would like to be called out at work in front of their colleagues in a public way. So why would we think that kids would react any differently when they don't have the social skills and capacity to take care of that? So, you know, really, really important to be reflective about. Michael is most irritable when we read. Can the literacy coach and special education team suggest reading intervention strategies? So the reflective teacher is trying to think through what was happening when this all occurred. So thinking about, well, it was reading. He doesn't like to read. Let's think through that. Why doesn't he like to read? It's not because he doesn't want to. Maybe he can't. Can Michael and I come up with a signal to let me know when he's feeling stressed and needs a 3-minute cool down? Right? Very simple. He doesn't need to make a big show. Just go ahead and leave. And we already have this agreement. So Dr. Green would say, create a plan B. Like, what's the plan B going to be? And then the final thing, kind of thinking about the shift five. So as each of these that I've gone through, it's really shifting mindset. So the very first one, that's really just the teacher being responsive and reflective and adopting that social emotional lens. All the way down to this last one, where we're saying, can I encourage my administration to consider creative interventions as alternatives to suspension and adjudication? So that's shift five, resist the criminalization of school behavior. So that's really, we want the students to move through all of these shifts and get to shift five. That's our goal. We do have a few questions. So if you are not in a school, in the school corporation, how would you create interest within the corporations to care about these issues? So I think always a partnership kind of approach. So many approaches work. I found from my work with the Department of Education, if I stuck the data in their face and said, shame on you, look what you're doing to kids, they definitely did not have an interest in working with me and it's bring the bear, use honey to bring the bear to the table. Well, that's definitely what we want to do. We want to create an interest by thinking through what's going to benefit them, right? What's the benefit in having less discipline issues and truly meeting kids' needs? You get to teach. Like, teachers went into this business to teach. And so that they get frustrated when their teaching is interrupted. And when students aren't feeling like it's important. So I spent all this time as a teacher creating these wonderful and engaging lesson plans. And then Joey ruined it, right? And so it gets me away from my baseline and I don't know how to get back to baseline. So I think one way is just creating the interest in the corporation. I think they care about the issues. They just might not have the capacity yet to understand. Not every district had to go through significant disproportionality, did the trainings, really did the heart work. We work hard, but we also do a lot of heart work, and that's hard to do. Undoing racism is a training that you will not go away from it unchanged. And so, our district, I'm very blessed to be in a district that is not afraid of having courageous conversations and talking to each other about our biases and really kind of thinking through that. But not every corporation is in that space. So again, knowing your corporation, knowing how you can entice and provide support and help grow in a safe growth, I think is important. So kind of thinking through it that way. Some of my favorite activities that teachers do with students to build a connection with them, honestly, it seems so, so simple, but every day we call it, 10 and 2, I can't remember it now, but you take over a period of, I think it's 10 and 2, over a period of 10 days, you spend 2 minutes just connecting with a child. So you might say, hey, you know, I love those new shoes you got on. You know, tell me about them. Are they Air Jordans or what are they? And you just take a true interest in them and really thinking through. I think any time you can see and hear every kid is important. So making sure that it's not just the loud kids, so the kids that throw the chairs and they might have some inappropriate vernacular that they're using to call you names. Those are the kids that they're my favorite because I feel like they need me and I can make a connection with them and we're going to work through some pretty deep stuff, but we're going to get out on the backside in a much better place. But some of my scholars that weren't loud, so they were very internalizing in their behaviors, I tended to see them overlooked. And so those are the kiddos that you also need to get connection with and just try to find something of interest using interest surveys, using them as leaders within my classroom or in the building. As a principal, I always had student helpers. We had principal for the day. We had other things that they could do and really feel like they're needed. Sometimes our students don't feel connected because they don't really understand their purpose. They don't understand, really, is anybody going to notice I'm here or not? And so I think that's the piece. And especially with our significant suicide rates in Indiana for adolescents, it's again, the behavior is communicating some needs and some true mental health needs that our kids are not feeling like they have a purpose and like that anybody would care if they were here or not. So I think, you know, that's a whole nother part of this, but how challenging behaviors that go unnoticed turn into much more significant behaviors that are really detrimental to their health. And so we've got to work through that. So here's the tale of two schools. So again, kind of thinking about Carlos had a heated argument with his parents before leaving school, so he's running late. Let's see the two differences. So we have the zero tolerance educational school, and then we have the restorative practices based educational school. So we have Carlos arrives at school, Carlos is late to the first period class, Carlos gets into a minor altercation in the cafeteria, and then later that afternoon, right? So as he arrives at school, in the zero tolerance school, he's greeted by metal detectors and a police search. In a restorative practices school, teachers and administrators greet him and his fellow students as they enter. I loved bus duty. I also love car duty. But as an administrator, that is where I got to make the most connections with kids. It was so much fun giving them fist bumps and saying, good morning, I'm so glad you're here. again, because we want to make sure they do feel connected to the school. Next, he is late to his first period class. So his teacher scolds him in front of the class. Carlos talks back and is given a detention. But we know that's the number one wrong thing to do, is scold him in front of his peers. Because if I'm scolded in front of my colleagues, I'm going to have to show up, right? Or show out. Because I don't want to look like, I'm the scared cat. So instead, the restorative practices teacher, the teacher waits until after class to speak with Carlos to learn more and sets up a meeting with his school counselor. So he's late to first period class. We don't want to assume that it's his fault. We want to try to figure out what's the root cause and then how can we support? How can we make the relationship better in the moment? All right, he gets into the minor altercation in the cafeteria. So a school police officer detains and arrests both students. So that would happen in A Tale of Two Schools. Maybe, obviously some suspension away from school. In the restorative practices, student peer mediators and support staff intervene, have the students sit down together and de-escalate the situation. So in a couple of our elementaries, we now have SEL ambassadors, and they are our fifth and sixth grade students that are assigned to our younger classes to do exactly that, peer mediation. So they're trying to help solve problems using restorative chats to figure out kind of what's the problem, how do we fix it, how do we make it better for next time. And then finally, later that afternoon, in the zero tolerance school, Carlos is held in a juvenile detention facility all afternoon, missing school. He now has an arrest record and is facing suspension. So again, as the chips stack up for him in a negative way, he is going to become disenfranchised from school. He's not connected. Nobody will care if he's there or not. In the restorative practices school, Carlos and the other student agree to help clean the cafeteria during a free period. Carlos meets with his counselor and parents after school to help resolve the conflict at home. So I would say cleaning the cafeteria isn't always the best natural consequence. I like to create natural consequences that match the actual incident. So for instance, we had a student that was doing some conversation, spreading some rumors around the building about another student. And so we did a restorative chat because all of the students were involved. And we did a restorative chat. We were able to come to some agreement. The natural consequence for that kiddo was they were going to do some education for the other students around bullying, around spreading rumors and the outcomes of spreading rumors. And the students involved actually chose to do it during, I said, well, you need to choose a time to do this. And unfortunately, you can't do it during class time because your job is to learn. So they chose to do it during recess and after school. And so they stayed and they did it. And they were able to educate the whole school about the consequences of spreading rumors and bullying. And that work was so much more rich than just suspending the students. And so why this is just such important work and why, when I think about restorative justice practices, how they truly do detour the school to prison pipeline. So some more of these, because a lot of people like to kind of think through, do this instead of this. So I'm not sure how many classrooms you've been in that you see the color-coded wall charts, that they're moving their clip or they're moving their fish or I don't know. I mean, there's all kinds. Those are the blaming and shaming publicly, right? So we joke in our district. So my superintendent is Dr. Butts. And we joke a lot that would we all be okay if during the administrator team meeting, he had a clip chart with all of our clips on it. And he decided to move us up or down in front of all of our colleagues. That would be really embarrassing. And so why we think it would be okay for kids, it's not, right? So again, how do we use positive behavior intervention supports to teach positive behaviors? And we can use some rewards in that, but really that's not what PBIS was about. PBIS was about teaching the expectation, not just expecting it. Another example Attempting to punish the whole class. Yeah. So my own personal teenagers, I remember when they were little, they did not understand this, especially my daughter, who is a teacher pleaser. She did not understand when someone did something wrong, they all got in trouble. And that went on her record. And she didn't have a record, but in her mind, it was on her record. So again, I think we need to think from the perspective of my student is not giving me a hard time. He is having a hard time. So again, if you go through the lens that Dr. Green asks us to, how do we meet a basic need? How do we teach a lagging skill versus just see the negative and punish it? So I think those are some of the examples. Recess, we're doing a huge push right now in our district. Don't Take Away Recess is the book, but taking away recess is one of the worst possible punishments we can do for kids. They're already not getting enough movement. They're already not getting enough fresh air. We cannot. That is something that, you know, I'm kind of on a pulpit about, but we do not. There are not benefits of students losing recess to be punished. Again, the student that I was talking about who made the educational announcements and all the information around bullying and spreading rumors, he chose that, but guess what we did? We made sure he had a different time to do some movement. So he was walking in the hall. He was doing jumping jacks. We did a lot of sensory input for him. So I think that's the piece that we've just got to really balance that, because we tend to jump to no recess for you.
Tara?
Yes.
We've had someone post in our chat box a question, and I'll read it if you don't mind.
Yes.
Do your schools have GSAs? And if so, have you noticed a change in the school climate, not just for LGBTQ students, but for all?
So we do. We're on the very beginning of that work, I would say. And I haven't been as involved as my director of guidance has been involved, because we're seeing it more at the secondary level. So that work really is lying there, not really in the Office of Special Services at this time. But I do think when we think about anybody being unique and having, you know, just a unique walk, it's not a bad walk, it's not a wrong walk, it's not a different walk, it's just a unique walk that they're going down, you know, we want to be supportive and we want to understand where they're coming from and how we can make their walk smoother, not in any way violating any kind of civil right or you know, just their success. We want every single one of our scholars to be happy and feel safe. Like, those are our two non-negotiables. Can we help them feel happy and safe? So I think that's the piece that I could get back to you after talking to the director of guidance. But I see a difference just in all of the work we're doing, where we're celebrating the uniqueness of all of us, all humans. And we probably had more, not media attention, but more work around our students of immigrants with everything that's been going on, that, you know, that's been some heart work for sure, helping our families feel safe and feel like they're connected to us when they're very afraid. All right, so trauma. So as we're talking about challenging behaviors and detouring the school to prison pipeline, we wanna make sure we're really thoughtful around conversations with trauma. Some of our scholars will say, well, I've not experienced trauma. So we also talk about stress. We talk about how sometimes an experience or multiple experiences cause extreme stress, and how that stress weighs on the body weighs on the brain, weighs on your emotions. So you can talk about it as a traumatic experience, or you can talk it about as a stress, traumatic stress. So, you know, everybody's kind of looking at trauma right now and trying to better understand the new research and then apply that to the school setting. We know in Indiana, we have a mental health crisis. We know that we don't have enough providers. We don't have not all of our individuals in Indiana have access to mental health support. So we have to do a really good job in our schools of helping our scholars see when stress is getting to be too much and when it's starting to weigh on their emotional and physical well-being. So this is a quick video, but I love this quote. Children are like wet cement. Whatever falls on them makes an impression. That just it means so much to me, because as I think about my footprints in my journey of my career, I sure hope that it's a positive impression. I do know that, you know, I've made mistakes, and there probably are some footprints that aren't the greatest on some kiddos, but I really hope that when we think about our children, that whatever we are modeling, whatever we're saying, whatever we're doing, it matters. And it is going to be at some time cured. And that's what they're going to have. You know, if you've ever tried to change cement after it's been cured, it's pretty tough. So we need to know that about our kiddos and kind of how they function.
The emotional effects of childhood trauma are well known, but new scientific research reveals that child's positive and negative experiences can shape and reshape the brain. Research suggests that the more a child witnesses violence, the more neural connections are created in regions of the brain that involve fear, anxiety, and impulsiveness, while fewer are created in regions that involve reasoning, planning, and behavioral control. The good news is the young brain is malleable for plastic and fostering stable, supportive relationships can prevent or help reverse this damage, resulting in lifelong benefits for the child's learning, behavior, and overall health. So how can you help a child in your life? Just remember these five healing gestures. Celebrate them with a compliment or by applauding their efforts. Comfort them by staying calm and patient. Listen to them and show an interest in their passions. Collaborate with them by asking their opinions, and inspire them with new ideas. These everyday gestures help a child look forward to a bright future.
So, thinking about that, you know, we've talked a lot about how the environment that they're in is impacting them and impacting their health. And so when we think about a student that has had significant adverse childhood experiences, it does change the brain. And so we're starting to really see some developmental delays, you know, as we think about our opioid addiction, and we're starting to see the stress that that's taking on for our students. You know, we definitely are thinking not only about the stress and the trauma, but also when does that then become a disability? And, you know, we know that, you know, we have our 13 eligibility categories, but we're also looking at, you know, other health impairment. And when a student has such adverse childhood experiences over and over, it is starting to impact their educational environment. So I think that will be coming through research and some other things and hopefully some work in the very near future, because I do believe that all of our kids deserve an individualized approach to what they need. And so, you know, not saying they need a label of any kind, but I think we definitely need to be considerate of those adverse childhood experiences and not just think of it as a behavior problem. So the ACE study, I feel like this is something that we've talked quite a bit about, but really the basic understanding of this is that it was done in a kind of middle income healthcare purpose to see if there was any correlation between stress and adverse experiences as a child, then how did that impact their health? So if you had, instead of having risky kinds of things happening to you as a child, then did you have better health? So I think that that really helps us to kind of understand where our kids are coming from. Again, basic needs. So if they are experiencing adverse childhood experiences as a child, then we know what that might look like. It might look like a social, emotional, and cognitive impairment. They might adopt some health risk behaviors like alcoholism or drug addiction or sexual promiscuity or some issues when it comes to that. Then that might lead to disease, disability, and social problems in early death. So as we're thinking about that, we know that 60% of children are exposed to violence, crime, or abuse in 1 year. So either directly or indirectly, and many in their own homes. And so as we think about that national research, then we've got to look at, so what are we doing about it? Because sometimes our students, our children, aren't the ones who can fix it. Sometimes we have to help them get out of that situation because, again, there are significant long-term outcomes of that. There's a correlation between the number of ACEs and struggles with school and health. This one really kind of helped me. If you haven't seen Sowers and Hall, I know they're coming back to Indiana here in the spring. I definitely recommend them. They are amazing. They are just amazing. They make it, I feel like they take the research and they make it so understandable and applicable, and I can take it tomorrow and use it. We've sent many of our staff and they've really had rave reviews, but the more ACEs a student experienced, the more likely he or she was to experience serious school and health issues. So their book just talks through, the ACEs survey and then what can we do about it. So when you look at 3+ ACEs, so they've had three different, on the ACEs survey, they've checked yes for three of them. We do have some of our staff actually take the ACEs survey themselves, because we also need to know where, you know, our trauma is. But 4.9 struggle with attendance, 6.1 with behavior, 2.9 with coursework, and 3.9 with health. So when we think about, as we're talking about behavior, you know, that's the area that we know it might help us uncover some things. And again, then we're looking at, we're not frustrated with them, we're curious. And then we're problem solving instead of trying to exclude. So I think those are really important things to think about. All right, so the toxic stress, how does that derail our healthy development?
Learning to deal with stress is an important part of healthy development. When experiencing stress, the stress response system is activated. The body and brain go on alert. There's an adrenaline rush, increased heart rate, and an increase in stress hormone levels. When the stress is relieved after a short time, or a young child receives support from caring adults, the stress response winds down and the body returns to normal. In severe situations, such as ongoing abuse and neglect, where there is no caring adult to act as a buffer against the stress response stays activated. Even when there is no apparent physical harm, the extended absence of response from adults can activate the stress response system. Constant activation of the stress response overloads developing systems with serious lifelong consequences for the child. This is known as toxic stress. Over time, this results in a stress response system set permanently on high alert. In the areas of the brain dedicated to learning and reasoning, the neural connections that comprise brain architecture are weaker and fewer in number. Science shows that the prolonged activation of stress hormones in early childhood can actually reduce neural connections in these important areas of the brain at just the time when they should be growing new ones.
Toxic stress can be avoided if we ensure that the environments in which children grow and develop are nurturing, stable, and engaging.
So really, what does this look like and what does it do to the body? So as we think about, this is Dr. Green's perfect, kids can't. It's not they won't, right? So we now know that the brain, when they've experienced stress and extreme stress over time, that prefrontal cortex and the really learning part of your brain stops working. It truly kind of shuts down. And we're into that amygdala of the brain as to where, you know, it's the fight, flight, or freeze. It's the saving mechanism of our kiddos. And we don't know when that fear and anxiety and stress are going to come into play. And so I think that's the piece that, you know, has really helped our staff is that kids aren't choosing to do this. It's truly, it truly is. They can't do it. Their brain isn't allowing them. So I think that's the important piece to help kind of move some momentum in this work. Ongoing exposure can also lead to a chronic wear and tear. So thinking about you personally, when you think about if you're chronically stressed or you're chronically not getting enough rest or not eating right, you think about the wear and tear on your body and your ability to manage your emotions, ability to think clearly. All of those things matter, and it's harder to bounce back. And so a lot of times that then leads to long-term behavioral and sociological disorders. And we see more depression, we see more drug abuse, we see heart disease, we see strokes, inflammation issues, all of these things that, again, why the ACEs study occurred was they were trying to see a correlation of we don't want all of these medical health issues going on. So if we're going to be proactive, we need to look at stress. We need to look at the amount of traumatic stress that our people, our children, and our adults are exposed to. So Dr. Jim Sporletter has done a lot of work in our state specifically, but he actually comes from Walla Walla, Washington. If you've ever seen Paper Tigers, he is the star principal in that show, in that documentary, and really has done some really great work around implementing a trauma-informed school. I know our four principals that got to do that work alongside me really felt like it was important, felt like very easy, easy kind of manual. It was nice to talk to someone who had done the work and walked the walk. So I think I definitely would recommend any of his work. 20 years, so I'm not sure if you all know what that number is or why that number's on there, but what we say 20 years. We are investing to give 20 years back. And so I said I've been in this profession for 20 years now, and one caring adult can give a child, give a person back 20 years of their life who's had four ACEs or more. So when we know that if someone has experienced four ACEs or more, medically, they are going to have a 20-year less lifespan, decreased lifespan, than someone who hasn't. And however, the positive to that is just one caring adult can save that, can save those 20 years, can give those 20 years back. And so that's always my goal, is that if I am able to deposit 20 more years onto the end of that person's life, that's great grandchildren, that's grandchildren, that might be the cure for cancer. I don't know. But it's worth the investment. It's worth the connections. It's worth the 10 and 2. It's worth doing this work and some of the stress that we also induce as we're doing this work. But a really important statistic there that you know, Jim saved many many kiddos 20 more years of their lives by his work. And so You know, he's a hero in my mind. All right, so we're going to stop there with me talking and kind of open it up for discussion or questions. Hopefully you found a little nugget of learning here. It might not have been all new learning. You're probably doing this work every day.
I just would like to remind everybody that you can post in the question and answer box. And again, if you take your cursor down to the bottom part of your screen, you'll see that there's some icons that pop up and you can post it in there. This is a great time to get any of those questions or have any of that discussion that you guys would like to participate in now, because again, this is very timely information that Dr. Reinhart has brought to us.
And honestly, if we don't get any conversation now, I know Jill has my email address, my contact information. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I'm definitely a partner of InSource and will always be. So don't ever hesitate.
And I will have to agree. I'm not seeing anything posting, Tara.
All right. No worries. So I hope everyone has a wonderful rest of your day and rest of the week. And again, anytime I can be of assistance, please don't hesitate to reach out.
I do want to thank you very much, Tara. I'm going to take the screen from you. And
okay, yes.
Again, thank you so much for coming today and participating in this. It is a very timely, like I said, it is a very timely conversation to be having. I know that at InSource just this morning that we were having some conversations on our, we have a bi-weekly call we have. We do have a couple things that were posted in the question and answer box. And there is one that says from A. James that she really appreciated the training and thank you very much. And
thank you.
Christina's question is, how can we get the school districts to believe that ACEs really exist?
Use the research. That's what I always do. Because behavior and discipline and all of this work is very emotional. Honestly, to the point of some people feel like it's their person, you know, like they're personally being attacked because of it. So I think using the research, there's some really great, so the Trauma-Informed School is a really, really great resource. That's a book. Help for Billy is another really great book. I think there's a few, if you Google ACEs, you'll be able to find quite a few great resources. I think, you know, you can always have them reach out to other districts that are doing the work. So I think that's always an option too. If another district, you know that, you know, this district just isn't quite on board yet. They may be busy and in doing something else, but I think pairing them up with someone else who's doing the work is always important. And there's quite a few of us now really, really doing this work. So there should be someone that we can pair them up with.
Okay, and this is Tara. I believe the Indiana Department of Education is very much on board with this too, and schools can always refer themselves there for more information, looking for some of those resources as well. But this is really not all that new.
No.
And it's unfortunate if we still have some schools that are not quite on board with it, but yeah.
Yeah.
There's a question, is there a list of Indiana schools participating in the trauma-informed school program?
So there is a few cohorts that have gone through the Positive School Discipline Institute. If you look at CPLI, is the name of the organization, and it's Positive School Discipline Institute. If you just search that in Indiana, you'll find it, and they list somewhere on their website will be a list of all the schools who have gone through their different cohorts. And then there are schools that did not go through the cohorts because it does cost money, that are doing some good work too. So again, the social emotional behavioral wellness team at the Department of Ed could hook you up. They would know some folks if you're thinking about a specific district and you're trying to match maybe, you know, again, you want to match. Anytime I'm doing work with another district, I'm trying to match similar demographics, similar population, similar community, because then it's not, well, they're Indianapolis, so they have lots of resources, or they're, you know, there's just those, there's variables that you want to try to think about.
I think I see another chat that came up.
Okay.
Got on late. Is there a recording of this session? Can the information be emailed to me? The handouts that match the PowerPoint, you would have received that when you registered. And I believe a reminder email was sent out this morning, again, with the link to join and with the handouts that match this PowerPoint. So you should have those. This is being recorded. It will be made available under our archived webinars on our website at insource.org. I can't tell you when it will be available, but hopefully soon. So all I can say is, you know, check back on our website periodically. Hopefully we'll have a recorded version available soon. Okay, I don't see any more questions. So we're going to go ahead and conclude the webinar. This is our contact. I did notice that we do have some call-in only users, and so I'll reiterate what I said at the beginning. If you're calling in by telephone only, we know you're there, but we do not know who you are. And so if you would like to get credit for having attended, please contact our central office at 800-332-4433 or email us at insource@insource.org by the end of business day today, and let staff know that you did attend the webinar, but it was only by phone, and we'll collect what information we need from you and hopefully make a certificate available for you as well. Please follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Don't forget about the survey that will be coming at the conclusion of the webinar. Very simple, quick, and easy. Question 6, however, provides the link for you to download your certificate of participation today. So don't ignore it or you won't get that certificate. So please watch for that. We do appreciate your feedback very much. Okay, Jill, anything else?
No, I just want to, again, thank you, Dr. Reinhart, for participating today. And we greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. We appreciate you and all your work.
Well, thank you very much.
Great webinar. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You do as well.